Whitney Knapp.
Hello.
Hi.
We're taking notes, right?
Yes.
Who we call then, Amy Bronze and Hedrick Strickland? Whitney, what was your last name?
Knapp, K-N-A-P-P.
Thanks. This is Amy Stillings, Lunato, and Lauren Jankovic with ERG.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, this is Matt Keene at EPA.
Hey, Matt.
Hi there, Lou.
Steve Seid.
Hi there, Steve. This is Matt Keene.
Hey, Matt. How are you?
Very well, sir. Good to hear your voice.
I'm blowing into work today on this blustery day.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Chilly. Yeah, I was over at a conference over at EPA's building the other day, and they had us in my little small conference room on the...
What is that?
Freezing.
Yeah.
Right off. A little small one. You know. You can't bring coffee or... One way to get consensus quick.
Yeah, I
checked
in on these,
so. Hello, this is
Abby. Hey there, Abby. This is Matt Keene.
Hey, Matt. How are you?
I'm well. Good to hear from you.
Yeah. Been a little while since we had one of these.
It has. So, this is Matt Keene. Scott Cassell was going to kick off this call, but he has had a flight delayed, unless something's changed and he's on the line and going to correct me. But otherwise, I will be taking this call start to finish. Right now on the line, I've got Lou, Lauren, Amy, Steve, and Abby. Are there others?
The entire Duke team is here as well. Whitney, Julie, Amy, Hendrick.
Whole team. It's a basketball team.
Yeah.
I'm not down there.
Hi, Matt.
Hey there.
Christmas here, too.
Oh, hi there. Christmas. Yeah, I hear there's a pretty good basketball team in college basketball this year. I can't remember who people were talking about, but a unanimous number one, I believe. Small group compared to the last call, which is a little surprising, but it's good to host this sort of reporting call halfway into the evaluation. Keep everybody honest. Keep it all transparent. Keep everyone, you know, accountable, if you will. So I want to thank everybody for joining us today, and we have, as you heard, the whole Duke team on the call. We have Lou Nadeau, Lauren Jankovic. Actually, Lauren, I've never asked how to say your last name, so I apologize.
Either way, it's fine. You're doing great.
Okay. Steve Sides, Amy Stillings, Abby know how to say your last name either, Abby, so I'm not going to try. Bedouris. And Chris Metzner on the phone. And for those of you who haven't met Chris yet, he's a good fellow who's helped us out with PaintStewardshipProgram.com, the graphic there, helping us get that together. And he's done wonders. Thank you very much, Chris. And Chris wanted to listen in and find out what the heck this stuff's all about anyway. So thanks for joining.
There you go.
All right. So, yeah, this group, everybody here knows what's going on. So I'm going to skip any kind of, introduction to the evaluation committee. And, yeah, this call is going to be just going through questions 1 through 12. I'm going to sort of follow... you have two options, two ways to follow this. We had some materials passed out, a Word document that has sort of questions 1 through 12 that Mike Eunice at Product Stewardship Institute passed along to us. And that document tells a little bit about how each question's answered, who's working on the question, some of the data sources. And is there anyone who has not received that Word document? Okay, and so you're welcome to follow along like that. I'm going to kind of go through these questions 1 through 12 using the graphic website. The questions are just labeled 1 through 12 on the graphic, paintstewardshipprogram.com. We're going to spend just about 5 minutes saying, what each question is, saying a little bit about how we're answering it, maybe a couple of the measures, data sources that we're using, any sort of, problems or opportunities that we see as a way to answer the question better. And then there'll be just a couple minutes for discussion, not too much time for discussion because we want to make sure we get through all 12. So I want to just encourage you right off the bat to, open a Word document or an email addressed to me, or click on if you use Facebook, click on the little Facebook icon and just post directly onto the Paint Stewardship Program page, and that icon's at the bottom of the Oregon program model on PaintStewardshipProgram.com. And just... take notes, make sure, just ask questions. You can send me those questions right afterwards or post them as we speak, if you like, in case we don't get enough time to get to all of your comments so that we can get through all 12 of these questions. Basically, I just want to say overall, for the evaluation work progress, I'd say we're doing well. Basically, from creating an evaluation committee many moons ago in a whole other state, and looking at failure and success and failure and dissolution, and then a coming back together in Oregon, we basically are 6 or 7 months out from the final sort of reporting responsibilities of this evaluation group's work. There's a lot of highlights from the work that's happened so far. We've got an evaluation method document organized that looks very strong. We've done a good bit of data collection and interpretation of that data related to collaboration so far. We've started to understand our access to information about paint volumes and cost information and sort of clarify what our needs are going to be going forward there. We've partnered with various scholars and graduate students and experts in different issues related to this measurement and evaluation for the Oregon program to make sure that we can dig deep in the specific the questions, individual questions, but we also have a diverse enough group to make sure that we sort of keep this holistic view of the purpose of this evaluation, which was Goal 6, as articulated by the PPSI originally. Goal 6, just to reiterate, was to measure and evaluate the performance of the pilot project and ensure that the results and learning from the project that the evaluation generates are transferable and relevant to the rollout of a national post-consumer paint management system. That was the goal that resulted in the creation of this evaluation committee 3 years ago, something like that. And basically, in short, I think we're pretty well positioned to provide quality products to a very diverse PPSI. We have a few places and uncertainty of data sources and data access that are affecting, you know, our understanding of what sorts of analytical tools we'll be able to use or the robustness of the answers that we'll provide for each evaluation question. But we're honing in on exactly what those issues are and how we're going to tackle them. For those on you on the call that or listening to this that will be providing some of that information, we'll be in touch. And of course, the funding, especially with no funding for federal government as yet being clarified, that's a bit of a mystery. But faith and hard work's gotten us pretty far so far. So we'll just keep going forward. So without going any further, are there any questions or comments before we start going through questions 1 through 12, getting updates on our work there?
Matt, this is Steve. I just had a quick question. I'm sure it's around. Maybe I'm just having a little difficulty finding it, and in the wee hours last night I didn't see it. I did respond as a collaborator to the survey that was provided. My understanding is that data, as you mentioned in your intro, is done now and is available somewhere. If you could flag that for me, where it is on the website or where that data is, I'd surely appreciate it.
Yeah, that's something I actually intended to mention. So at paintstewardshipprogram.com, at the bottom there's a list of additional materials. Steve,
right.
I think this is added all the way at the bottom. I think it's number 20. And
okay.
number 19 is the PowerPoint document. Number 20 is the full report.
Okay, are those relatively recently put up there?
Just yesterday, I think.
Okay, great, because I maybe it was even after I was messing around on the site. Okay, thanks.
Yes, sir. Is there anything else from anybody on the line? Okay, then we will go ahead and get started. The very first question that was articulated here in the 12 was about collaboration, and this was also one of the six goals that was specifically mentioned by the Paint Product Stewardship Initiative when it was laying out the goals for this pilot program. The goal was for the pilot to be a collaborative and cooperative process from planning to implementation. So question one was, to what degree was the pilot program a collaborative process? And, you know, we kind of were thinking about that in terms of how did different groups view it, and also sort of what tools and strategies were used and maybe which ones were useful and not as useful. I'm going to stop there and let the folks at Duke kind of take over the discussion here for about 5 minutes and let you guys tell us sort of, where you started out and how you approached this question and what you did and a little bit about what you found.
Okay, hi everybody. My name is Amy from the Duke team. And just to reiterate, our research question was, to what extent was the pilot program a collaborative process? With the two sub-questions of how did the different groups view the process and how effective were the tools and strategy used to foster collaboration? So the first thing we did was design our survey through the web, a program using Qualtrics. And we had 23 questions that included some demographics, such as what type of organization and role, what are the communication tools that are used versus what's preferred to be used, the level of participation, and just some opinions about the collaboration in general. So we designed our survey, and then we held a focus group in October, and we just gathered some different groups from campus who were involved in collaborative processes, through campus greening initiatives. And we just had a discussion about the tools and the barriers of collaboration, and we also had them go through our survey to determine if all the questions made sense and if things needed to be reworded or whatever. So we just had a few changes after that. We adjusted our Likert scale, and we shortened some of our questions and just reworded some things so that it was a little bit more clear. After the focus group, we did a pretest, and we sent it to 10 active members in the PPSI process, and we had a 50% response rate, and we received really good feedback on it. We actually only had to change one question, and we just reworded it. So based on the fact that there wasn't too many issues with the pretest, we were able to use those responses in our actual data analysis. So finally, in November 9th to the 19th, we administered our survey. We had 409 people on our email list, and we received about 30% response rate, which was like 125 people. And of those 125 people, 88 said that they were heavily involved in participating in the process. So just some key highlights about what we found. We found that most of the respondents were local or state government, and the frequency of communication with different partners was slightly less than monthly, which we thought was a little bit less than what we expected to find. We also found that most of the tools, communication tools that are currently being used are face-to-face, phone, and email, but people would prefer to use the website more. And also, there was a little bit of apprehension about shared databases, but it could be something to look into. We think maybe people don't understand how it could be helpful to them, so just something to look into. And some other suggested communication tools would be broadcast conferences, webinars, maybe an electronic newsletter, or a blog and comment area on the website. So now Hedrick is going to go a little bit more into our results.
So you also did quite a bit of inferential statistics to see if we could determine the differences in the views of collaboration from different groups. And overall, we found that 83% thought that it was a collaborative effort, and that means people who voted 5, 6, or 7 on the 7-point scale, so above neutral, and there were no differences in the overall perception of collaboration between organization type, when they started, or the role, such as like funder, manager, or observer. We also looked at the 5 dimensions of collaboration, which are in that document that y'all have, and those were put forth by Anne-Marie Thompson and Ted something from University of Indiana, and we found that based on those 5 dimensions of communication, the private sector, which we counted as manufacturers, retailers, and people who said that they were other, because those are mostly private groups, those thought that the collaboration, or saw the collaboration a little bit less positively than did the government. And for the 5 goals, which were the 5 PPSI goals, we found the same thing, where the private sector thought that the collaborative effort was a little bit less important in achieving those goals than did members of the government. We had this third group that was NGOs, trade associations, universities, and that only had like 8 or 9 people, and so it was too small to do inferential statistics with them. But it shows in our report where the ones that did take the survey fell in relation to the others. And I think generally they were also a little bit more with the private sector, thought that it was a little bit less collaborative. And then another interesting thing we found is that increased participation in conferences was associated with a lower perception of collaboration, whereas increased participation in phone calls was associated with a higher perception of collaboration, and government was more likely to participate in the phone calls and also thought the collaboration was, thought the process was more collaborative. And that's our summary of results.
Can you define conference in this context?
Yeah, we meant the briefing calls. Oh, sorry, the conferences, those annual or biannual conferences that were like in Portland this year and Minneapolis and Tennessee? D.C.
So we listed out all the conferences that have occurred since 2002, and people marked off which ones that they attended.
Okay, thank you. I guess one other question, and how did the meetings, the PPSI stakeholder meetings, which category, if any, did they fall into?
The PPSI?
There were a series of in-person multi-day meetings.
Those were conferences.
I believe those are the conferences.
Okay, so that's different than a national conference. I'm just a little clarification to make sure in the report, because they're different, a NAMA national conference or a PESI conference versus the stakeholder meetings. So I'm just a little confused of which they actually are.
We don't remember where we got that list of conferences / stakeholder meetings, but if you look at the report, there's a list of the ones that we ask what people attended, and so you can look at those and see which one.
Okay.
Or what we're referring to. I think we got that list off the website.
Okay. Matt and the Duke team, thanks for this. This is Steve Sides from ACA. Not having had a lot of chance to dive through it, I just read the executive summary. But having been one of your data points, I always felt it would be interesting to see how this ultimately was perceived by the good friends we've made over all these years in this collaborative process of PPSI. But I note in the title and I note in the data collection, and perhaps less because I haven't had a chance to look at the data analysis, it was to look at both collaboration as a function of PPSI and the pilot project. And not having had a chance, again, to look at this a lot, is there a splitting of the assessment of those two initiatives within this document, or has it been all lumped together?
I think it's been lumped together for the most part. we did look at when people started, like whether they started way back in the planning stages in the PPSI only part, and whether they started sort of with the advent of the pilot program. But as a whole, we've mostly lumped it together.
Okay, because, those of us that have been a part of the process for a long time know that it's had its ups and downs, and certainly that's reflected by anybody who's been asked to sort of size up collaboration. So, then in that regard, what utility does this have to evaluating the pilot project in Oregon?
Steve, this is Matt. In the survey, there was a question that grouped by when people were or were not involved. So the data can be analyzed in terms of when people were involved and extrapolate out from there when they felt it was more or less collaborative. I haven't also had a time to dig through the data and the analysis yet, but that is an option. And the way that we're going to, because we need to move on to the next question, the way we're going to work with this that Hedrick and her colleagues at Duke have, the work that they've done, is that the evaluation committee will take their work and integrate it into the full evaluation report to make sure that it deals with the issues that are most important to the evaluation of the pilot overall. So, this is, in other words, this is interim reporting. thanks for the question, Steve.
I'm happy to I'll look at it and get back to you on it. That's great. It's good enough.
Excellent. Thanks. So question number two is, describe the Paint Stewardship Organization, including its funding mechanism and infrastructure. This question was asked in terms of sort of the factors that contributed to infrastructure choices and questions about the funding mechanism, whether it's how it's defined, whether it's transparent and complete. And I'll let someone from ERG, I'm not sure who.
I'll take it, Matt.
Okay. Let Lou take it from here.
Sure. So the evaluation question two, certainly not as far along as evaluation question number one. I think we'll see that with most of the rest of the questions. But I would say evaluation question number two is kind of in the about-to-be-launched stage. The leads on this will be Hedrick, who at Duke will be working on this as part of her thesis, as well as is it Cynthia Searcy at Georgia State University and her class on, I believe it's evaluation methods. We'll be looking at this one also. So what I'll do is I'll try to give an overview of just kind of where this question is headed. And then, Hedrick, maybe if you could at the end kind of give us a quick soundbite on where you're headed with your part of the question. So, I mean, overall, this is, I would call it a process analysis question where we're looking at the PSO and, you know, as described, you know, what factors contributed to it, just how it was formulated and what were the decisions that were made in that process. And then the Georgia State class will be looking at a lot of these questions and talking to people in kind of a qualitative sense and asking, doing some interviews, maybe looking at some data. You know, we'll kind of leave it up to them to define their methods here. ERG's role and EPA's role in this will be to, I guess, facilitate that, to help them make sure they're asking the right questions that will contribute to the evaluation as well as hopefully putting them in touch with the right people. I would imagine some people on this call at some point in the near future will be getting calls from Georgia State at the turn of the beginning, I guess, the next semester is when they would start this. And Hedrick, why don't you talk a little bit about your part of this question?
Okay. For my master's project, I'll be looking at the convenience of this program for Oregon residents. And it'll mostly start next semester. But I have a final GIS project due tomorrow, which I'm doing like a trial version of a model for just Multnomah County. And so I'll be looking at the current pickup sites for the paint program and look at how many people it's accessing, and then the model will be also a tool to identify other or optimize the potential sites. And there's a list of those to select the ones or recommend the ones that are that will meet the needs of the Oregon residents based on minimizing travel time, minimizing distance traveled, maximum coverage with the least amount of sites, and there was another one. Like targeting a specific market share, or I think market share. but as I said, that's mostly next semester. But working on a trial, smaller version that'll be due tomorrow.
Great. And I think in this question, certainly you know, we have a lot going on coming up. But you know, as we move forward with kind of interim reporting on the evaluation questions, and as we begin to see stuff roll back in from both Hedrick and from Georgia State, the part of the question that I think where we should focus kind of the evaluation committee's guidance on this are the lessons learned part of this, where we make sure that, you know, the information we're getting out of it, I mean, certainly we're going to be answering the question as it is, but, you know, the lessons learned is kind of an area where I think we can certainly focus some of the commentary on what we're seeing in interim reporting to make sure that both Georgia State and Hedrick have good guidance on where we need to generate good information that can be used later on for other states moving forward. So if you kind of keep that in your back of your mind as when we think about evaluation question two moving forward, the lessons learned, and in particular with that, focusing kind of our comments on what we're hearing and how it can be translated into lessons learned.
so this is Abby in Oregon. This is the question that I'm the most excited, particularly Hedrick's work, to see, and I am entirely available to you to help you answer these questions or help you, kind of understand the idiosyncrasies of the state that might not be obvious just from your mapping. So if you have any questions, I absolutely want to help. And if your paper that's due is available to see, I would love to see it, just to get a hint of what's coming.
Okay. It's not actually a paper. It's just a GIS model, so I have to know GIS to use it.
I can't, but there are people here who can.
Okay.
So if it's something you can share, or if you need to wait, that's fine, too. But this is important, actually, not just to other states in paint, but it's hugely important to Oregon for other products.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I'll definitely get that to you.
Thanks.
So that's something, Hedrick, you and I, maybe we could talk about how to make that publicly available when you're ready, if we can make it available on the website, mm-hmm. if somebody has the right plugins or GIS on their machines at work, then it might be a useful tool. So we can talk about
that. Well, one thing I was thinking about is you can do certain functions over, like you use ArcGIS to develop the program, but then it's like broadcast basically over Google Maps, so it's available to anyone. It might be too like processing intensive to do that. But I was going to look into that as an option.
Okay, that's great. Chris Metzner, if you're listening, maybe we can talk about how to integrate Google Earth into the paint model at paintstewardshipprogram.com to accommodate that sort of, to overlay that GIS work into the model.
Yeah, and any kind of links we need to give her for, to the plugins or, onto Google Earth, all that good stuff.
Okay. Well, we will continue that conversation then. Are there any more questions or comments about question number two?
Just a quick comment, Steve here. Hedrick, nice job in writing this up. I always look at these things as a sell job, and you did a great job on the front end, and then unfortunately you're dealing with uncertain questions on the back end. So I'm hopeful all this will come together for you. But this is for you, Matt. I mean, basically, what Hedrick's doing is really on the convenience question. As she said, we got other ones here, funding mechanisms and other elements of infrastructure, plus the overall descriptor. I mean, I'm feeling like we're going to be engaged with you on this as well, and I'm not quite sure how, a heavy effort on the GIS on the movement of product from the consumer into the system is going to answer all these questions here. So,
sure, see, this is Luke. That'll be kind of the area in which the Georgia State class and Cynthia Searcy at Georgia State would be taking on. They would be kind of answering all those other questions, other parts of that. So we have kind of a defined piece that Hedrick has taken on as part of her thesis, which is kind of that convenience piece, and to do it in a kind of a real sophisticated way with the GIS, and then. The rest of it, kind of the other pieces that kind of flow in here on infrastructure choices and funding, all that's going to come out of Cynthia Searcy's class.
Okay. Well, we'll certainly be interested in that and recognize there could be some data we can provide to support it. Thanks.
Yep.
Excellent. Thanks, Steve, Lou, and Hedrick for all of that. Question number three, you'll see on the graphic, it's a red splat, a red paint splat on top of a purple arrow. The purple is the flow of information, and this is about the flow of education and outreach information to retailers and consumers, and that it's a red splat is an indication it's an impact evaluation question. So we're kind of looking at a change in knowledge, perhaps, or a change in the way that someone does something, a person's behavior, a consumer's or retailer's behavior. This question is, how did education materials and strategies affect consumer awareness and behavior? We're going to look at the messages that were used, some of the materials that were developed for this question, and from there, I'll let Lou from ERG
sure.
take it.
Yep. So for this question, we really need to get
Lou,
at...
Lou, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Lou.
Yep.
Just one more thing.
Yep.
In the... You'll see in the pop-up box that comes up a little video where Jennifer Nash introduces this question. You also see a link at the bottom of that box to the Pink Care Awareness Study that has already been conducted and has data that the evaluation committee will be integrating into its reporting. So there's a link there to that study. Sorry, Lou.
Oh, no problem. We're just marveling at the pop-up graphics. So question three, to really get at this, and, you know, Matt, I'd actually also include question four in this discussion right now, because I think we might go over the same type of stuff on question four. So question four is, you know, very related. It deals with consumers' purchasing decisions and their management of paint at drop-off and the management of paint at drop-off facilities. And looking at the way fee effect might have affected their behavior. So both questions, three and four, would rely on getting information from consumers on how the program and the materials developed by the program have affected their behavior. And to do that, you know, obviously we need, you know, information from consumers. The Paint Care, of course, had the survey done back in, August 2010, August of this year, to collect some of that information. I mean, in some sense, this question, I think, is a little broader than what was collected in that survey. And so right now, I think this question is at a stage of we're looking for potentially alternative data sources or alternative ways of getting at this besides getting information from that original survey, but maybe getting information from some follow-up surveys. One, potentially, you know, ERG had come up with, I guess, a suggested set of questions that could be asked that would get at kind of the measures for this question and looking at that potentially being implemented. I'm not exactly sure where that's at this point. And, you know, right now, I'd have to say, without implementing an additional survey, we're probably looking at doing this a little bit more anecdotally on getting at answering some of this and getting answers to some of these questions in terms of interviews or reviewing, kind of, you know, talking with some people who are involved in the program to see kind of the way consumers might have changed. So, and with that, I know we've had some discussions here with American Coatings on the talking to their consumer paint panel on that, and maybe we could discuss that a little bit today on whether or not that's a possibility. So right now, yeah, in some sense, this question is suffering from a little bit of data need in some sense. The best way to answer it is to get information from consumers, which may not be possible due to cost or other feasibility constraints. And, you know, the second best or the next approach would be more anecdotal, which would kind of give us, I think, limited information to provide really good answers to these questions.
Okay, well, Lou, this is Steve here.
Yep.
And certainly we're interested in exploring how we might add data into this equation. I think some expectation adjustment may be necessary here. I wouldn't necessarily call it anecdotal. That's always the way we, you know, we fall back on anecdotal. I think there will be a lot of data.
Steve, that's what economists say.
Yeah, I know it. Trust me, we just... discussing that this morning, and I'm not as a PhD candidate, I'm not allowed to say anecdotal. You know, it has to be theory based and real. Anyway, but all I was going to say is that correctly, the Bradshaw survey was precast and went forward with as much modification as we could tweak out of it at that point. But the opportunity to use the panel is still there. And would have to be understood that it is it's a panel that is pre-selected and has in fact made purchases of paint. So in that regard, it's useful, and
mm-hmm.
probably less shouldn't be characterized as anecdotal at this point. But
sure,
I think it'd be very useful to do it. There are probably other ways to look at this larger question of behavior. I mean, if all of a sudden basements are unburdened and the quantity of waste collected is staggering, obviously there's been a change in consumer behavior, in some way, shape, or form, but we'd never be able to attribute it to anything other than, you know, gosh, isn't it great it's happening. So we're all for it to the extent that we can get at it through some of these things or through some targeted activities that would go forward. I just had two points. One is nowhere else in the evaluation question summary do we begin to slot things as opportunities or obstacles. Just a suggestion here that we not characterize things as obstacles, particularly when I'm saying let's try to do it in a, you know, let's try to get it right the next time around. And we have a temporal issue in virtually all of this. It takes time to change consumer behavior, and I hope we're going to be able to measure that change over time. But calling things obstacles and opportunities is probably not necessary at this stage of the game, given the openness we have here.
All right, that's fine. We can recast that, and that's kind of the wording we had stuck in there. We can recast that in this document to be more kind of issues for discussion or kind of open issues or something like that.
Right. Yeah, we don't want to be an obstacle ever.
Sure. Sure.
We probably will be anyway. You know.
Good point. We'll recast it as open issues.
At least in
one. One thing I want to point to here in the evaluation method. On page number 30 is it's a table that's just sort of, it works like a little consumer reports table, if you've ever used consumer reports with closed circles, open circles. Basically, the table lines up evaluation questions with measures. So if you look at evaluation question 3, you can see some of the measures that the evaluation committee is considering in order to answer that question. And, you know, one thing I wanted to bring up, and because there's not too many people on the line right now, I feel like I can put Abby on the spot and just ask Abby if you've thought any more about, you know, the potential for pursuing some of these measures on page 30 as they're listed in the evaluation method via another survey instrument.
So I was hoping to speak up. I would like to see the survey that that you guys have put out there done. I am just having trouble getting, and aside from the fact that we're in like one of the poorest states in the country right now, and we have a new governor and we're seeing our budgets going to go to hell, pardon my French, I can't seem to find the time in my day to do it, to be just totally honest. But to me, that's the only solution, whether we do it or someone does it. I think we need that survey. We need to see whether Oregonians are changing their behavior based on the material out there. And I understand it takes, there's temporal aspect. I understand behavior change, Steve. But I feel like we have to do that survey, not repeating the Bradshaw survey, to just be blunt. I'm having trouble getting just, I'm supposed to be spending like a tiny bit of my time on paint, and I spend an exorbitant amount of my time on paint, and I'm already spent more than the money that Paint Care is supposedly giving us for the next 5 years. So I'm just at a bit of a loss about trying to make it happen, although I do think that is the solution, is that someone does that survey. So not a good answer. I can't seem to get my head above water to do it, Matt.
Okay. On the website, do we have the draft of the survey that the evaluation committee put together? Is that posted publicly? Is that one of these 21 documents that I've looked through? But
which number is the method, the last version of the method?
Well, the appendices weren't.
Posted?
They're not within the methodology. They're separately.
It does exist as an appendix to the method document, but it sounds like it's not up on the site.
We'll get that recent version posted to this list of additional materials, just to make sure that it's easy to point someone to it in the future. And I know, Steve, you have something to say.
No, I just said I think it's under item 8. If that's the memo you folks prepared, telling us what questions you thought should be answered.
Okay.
It was in response to the Bradshaw survey instrument, and of course we rebutted a bit about, you know, what we thought about the questions, and there was some modification of Bradshaw that was negotiated, but I think I haven't opened it. Let me open it here.
Yeah, I think you're right, Steve. So basically, the description needs to say The evaluation committee survey survey instrument, it just needs to be clear that that is actually a draft of the survey instrument, I guess. And we could repost it so that it's just the survey and leaves out some of the introductory comments, and maybe that'll help Abby in the future when we, you know, want to make sure that anyone can see it whenever they want if we have a discussion with a university out there in Oregon. And Abby, if you and I, you know, if we could talk, maybe we can talk and figure out a way to make sure that we don't miss the opportunity because we both get furloughed or something like that. Okay.
So let's have a conversation following this sometime soon.
Excellent. Okay.
It's 19 questions, Matt. That's the number of questions. Okay. And
right.
It isn't.
Okay. Were there other, right there, we sort of went over question 3 and 4 together. Lou, were you finished in sort of summarizing those two?
Yeah, I think, you know, it sounds like, you know, our path here is, you know, try our best to get the survey instrument implemented. If not, then I think we need to move on towards the paint panel as a viable source of information and design kind of a data collection around that if possible. I mean, that would be more of kind of a almost a focus groupish type of approach to it.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Right, okay. Okay, then. Question number 5. See, this is has a bit about cost impact as well. Question number 5 is, how has the program affected the collection of post-consumer paint in terms of volume, cost, environment, convenience, and infrastructure? At least we're not trying to get to too much there, and we've kept it narrow enough. I think Amy just laughed. I'm going to just turn this right over to ERG if you guys want to start covering what we're doing there.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously the big question. We spent a lot of time. Remember, we had a call back a year ago. There you go. Thanks, Amy. A year ago, where we spent a lot of time on this question and the measures related to this question. And so, you know, this is the big question. It has to do with, you know, obviously the paint that's coming into the system and its flow through the system. And kind of tracking that over time. I know that, you know, Paint Care is certainly tracking some of this information. You know, here our big data source, of course, is going to be the data that would be collected by the program itself. And for us to track that, cost is, of course, in there. I think the way we've conceptualized cost in this question is more kind of in a more simplistic way, because we have some other cost questions later on. This one is more cost per gallon. To do the processing. There are other cost questions later on, but you're right, Matt. This is a big question requiring obviously a good chunk of data to answer and to be collected on as frequent basis as we can. You know, our understanding is right now is that, and feel free to correct us if we are wrong, but that data is being collected kind of on a monthly basis that deals with the volumes coming in, the volumes being processed. The cost data is kind of on a less detailed basis than I think our question had, our measures had anticipated, but the bigger thing here, I think, is of course the flow of paint into the system. And I mean, any time that we can get access to that data, I guess, and kind of pull it together, we could pull together kind of a summary report at this point on where we're at.
So Lou, this is Abby.
Yeah.
I'm expecting from Paint Care in January, probably late January, some 6-month volume data.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that will be helpful. It's not going to help you on the cost end.
Yeah.
The aggregated data, we are currently in the midst of a public records request for the budget, which is with the attorneys of Paint Care's and ours. So we'll see what information ends up being public and what isn't.
Okay. All right. I mean, that's, I guess, to be worked out between the attorneys. So on the volume data, Abby, will that be kind of broken out by month? Do you know?
I would expect so, because it has been so far. The first 3 months that we saw was monthly.
Okay. That's perfect. That'd be perfect. And then broken out by kind of, is it also broken out by kind of where it was dropped off, as well as the different stages of processing that the paint went through? I mean, there's all sorts of, I mean, the flow diagram does a great job, I think, of depicting kind of where things can be in the system. I mean, would it be on the level that we see in the flow diagram?
I don't know that I will see that in January for the first 6 months, but it's certainly information that Paint Care is collecting.
Right. Because at some point it would be great on this diagram. I think we probably talked about that. When you click on one of the circles, you get kind of the numbers associated with that circle, especially the blue ones, like exchange or even retailers or the events, kind of what was collected and where and such. So, when you can release that to us, we'd be great. We'd be grateful to see it, and we could match that up with kind of where we what we think we would need kind of for evaluative purposes and kind of see where kind of where, and see whether or not those gaps will be filled longer term.
And just so you know, ERG has been working with Seaside, and we're currently discussing that level of detail and putting together a wish list. So, you know, industry definitely paying care of the
support. Christmas is coming, and a wish list.
So I definitely think we're going to get some good data from them.
Breakdown-wise, you know, cost is always the issue, but we'll see where it ends. Okay.
Yeah, this is Matt again. On page 30 and 31 of the method, you can kind of look at question number 5 and see the measures that we're using to get at question number 5, and you know, a lot of what's going to make this possible to start getting at things like gallons per trip or cost per miles per trip, that sort of thing, is some of the work that Hedrick's doing with GIS, that descriptive and analytical power being added to what we're doing here. And Hedrick, I didn't know if you wanted to throw in anything while we're talking about one of your questions.
No, I don't have anything to add other than what I've already told you. I mean, it's still in the very early stages of this, so not much different to add to this one.
Right. Are there any other questions about number 5 before we move on to what number 6 is all about?
Matt, I just and Lou at ERG, I just want to make a constructive comment on the actual evaluation methodology document from October. Matt keeps referring to page 30. We particularly like table 513 as a crosswalk on page 49. Because what it does is it puts the big blocks, you know, of information on the left-hand side and the evaluation questions the other way. I just throw that out for what it's worth. Sometimes it's, you know, you look, when you run on a question-oriented approach, you know, things get lost. And this is nice. This is a nice chart that's helping us explain things to people in the industry. So I just thought I'd toss that out.
Excellent, Steve. I will pay you later.
Yeah, that's great, Steve, because that was the purpose of having it in dueling ways. There were discussions between us and Matt about kind of the ethics, which way to go with it, and we decided to do it both for relevant.
Let me tell you, if you were going to write the report, this is the one you'd run off of, I think, because you'd want the big block headings and then jump into it from a smaller scale. So I liked it. All right.
Super.
Now, I'll mention this again later on, that other table that just resorts this information. I'll mention that when we talk about the question 11 about transferability. So are there any other points of constructive criticism or questions? All right. Question number 6, you can see on our diagram on the paint model is over on the right side, along the waste hierarchy, less preferred, more preferred, green splat. How has the program affected used paint reprocessing, paint recycling, and paint-related energy recovery in terms of volume, infrastructure, and cost? Lou, did you want to take that one?
Yeah, I mean, this is So now looking at kind of paint from the reprocessing standpoint, you know, in five it was kind of the, is more of a collection standpoint, how it's getting processed in the system. So this is more, but this also goes broader than question five did on the collection system. So here we're looking at collecting information on the volumes of paint that are going through the different reprocessing stages. That sounds like it's probably something that's coming in the report in January. So this kind of is an extension of that, but it also looks broader at kind of the infrastructure of the reprocessing facilities and how that's changed with regard to the implementation of the program. So here, you know, there's certainly data that are going to be collected from the reports, but here it's also a matter of we need to work with Abby and work with the state of Oregon to figure out just what have been the changes in infrastructure, and Hedrick, of course, is working on some of this, I believe, as part of her thesis on changes in infrastructure. So we have a broad question dealing with the volume of the reprocessed paint that's flowing through the system at the reprocessing stage, and then as well as the different infrastructure that's supporting that. And, of course, cost is thrown in there, too, so we need to get some level of cost information to help answer this question, but it sounds like at this point that might be a little bit held up.
This is Matt. Am I right that maybe Amy, you had some conversations with Metro about this question, or was that other questions in general?
Well, it was kind of a combination of five and six, and basically as a public entity, they basically need to share whatever we ask. So, but I haven't gotten much more. I was trying to better understand what paint care was going to be providing, and then what if we needed additional detail from Metro. So,
yeah, I mean, five and six follow, I think, along very similar tracks in terms of the data we need to collect.
Okay, are there any questions or comments about question number six? Okay, question number seven is about our HHW facilities. This was a question or an issue that certainly received a whole lot of attention whenever the issues of measurement and evaluation of this program came up, related to costs and that sort of thing, and I know Abby's very interested in this question as well. What was the impact of the program on HHW facilities in terms of the types of paint collected, costs, and the way in which the facilities operate?
In terms of this question, the key here will be to be able to collect information from the HHW facilities, and that's an area where we still need to explore kind of, first of all, I think we want to talk to some HHW operators who could kind of give us that information on what's feasible to even collect from them, and then to figure out a way to actually collect that information on in terms of the amount of paint collected and the cost. Yeah, Abby, I'm not sure, would you get much from the HHW facilities themselves as part of this?
I do collect some data from them, mm-hmm. actually, what we do it every other year. But this is pretty basic information. The problem you're going to encounter is that oil-based paint, they often mix with other flammables, and so the data on that is going to be less good than the data on latex paint. But I can certainly help you work with some locals, and I'd encourage you to, you know, I know Metro might be an obvious one, but we have different kinds of facilities that are all of them much smaller and
sure.
impacted differently.
Sure. I think what we'll do is we'll contact you after the call at some point and get some names of those maybe smaller facilities to talk with. And then maybe explore a little bit of the data that you might have. But it sounds like if it's every other year, and we might need a little more frequent data.
Yeah, I can show you the report. They put a report out every 2 years. So.
All right.
And our new one is about to come out, but I think working directly with them is going to be much more effective.
Okay.
The detail that you need.
Sure. Okay, we can certainly follow up with that. And then at that point, we need to figure out kind of a how we're going to collect that and the logistics of that type of collection, because it might be something that Oregon DEQ has to make a request for rather than EPA contractor.
Absolutely, I'm willing to work.
Sure.
We work with them closely. I don't think it will be
yep.
a problem. Making it as simple for them to fill in the blanks as possible is
yep.
the key.
Yeah, absolutely, because the undertone here being that, you know, it's if it's initiated from EPA, then it's Paperwork Reduction Act stuff.
Okay, got you.
Right.
I just quick question, Steve, here. Is the interest in the impact on all HHW facilities that have in the past collected paint, or is it just the ones that are still within the, you know, the paint care system? I mean, I see a lot of smearing around of impacts at this point, so obviously it may be better to try and get an assessment of the broader picture of impacts.
What do you mean by broader impact?
Right. If the household hazardous waste collection facility operated in Oregon no longer has to collect paint because they're not in, you know, the collection system,
mm-hmm.
paint care is funding and supporting, that's one scenario.
Sure.
But that they still do collect paint. I mean, people show up and maybe they're not able to, for a variety of reasons, to shunt people over to other facilities that are operating in the same geographic area. So we have a smearing of infrastructure questions here at this point that might muddy the waters on the impact on household hazardous waste facilities. At the very least, if they do collect and paint care picks up the product, there's a, you know, the cost issue is addressed in some fashion at this point. So, you know, again, I think this is a messy question, quite frankly, and depending on how everybody on the evaluation committee would like to see it answered. It is a good question to answer. I was there a year ago in December, and there's still issues, and I understand, I'm looking here in the chart, there was a February meeting in which stakeholder participants offered some input on this. So what are we pursuing here? HHW facilities that are part of the network or the broader question of impact across all HHW facilities?
Yeah, I'll put the question to Abby, actually. I mean,
there's not a lot of difference in those two. I believe they will all be under contract by the end of this calendar year. So I don't think it's actually as messy as you might think.
Yeah.
We might have liked them to stop collecting paint, but that just didn't pan out as an option and still provide convenient service.
Yep.
And Steve, just to clarify, this is Amy. One of the questions that we want to get out of this is there was a lot of concern if a HHW doesn't collect paint, how is that going to impact the collection of other hazardous household waste? And so I think that's kind of what that third part of this, you know, mm-hmm. how did not no longer being in the system now impact the collection of other things?
Sure, but it, you know, but if
so, it's not exactly going to be paint focused necessarily.
I understand, but if, you know, if the hope here is that the consumer is aware of many other options and convenience options for managing their leftover paint, there will be changes in the HHW facilities, what they handle. You know, they could see a decline. And that's a good thing, I guess, if it's being picked up somewhere else. So.
Yeah. And Abby, what you mentioned is kind of, I think, an interesting finding in and of itself, that if you had wanted to see kind of the reduction in HHW facilities collecting the paint and they just not willing to do so because it kind of it better serves the needs, that itself is kind of an interesting piece already.
Yeah, I think this one actually will be very telling. There's a lot of complicated things that are going on with how the HHW facilities respond and with trust and with change that could be learned, as well as sort of just the plain logistics of if I don't have to re-blend the paints, how much money I save.
Okay,
this is Matt. One thing I want to mention now that possibly relates to this question and also the education materials. One of the roles of the evaluation committee was to do things like establish change or impact, change caused by the program. And, you know, those decisions were made before before, of course, the program began, and have been being made, ongoing until today, even. One of the roles that the evaluation committee can serve, where it's not possible to, for instance, establish impact, because, for instance, we possibly haven't been able to gather data before and after the program began in the right way, perhaps, or in what for whatever reason that we cannot definitively answer that question. It's a role of the evaluation committee, though, to establish a method to answer questions of impact. And I think that what may happen with a few of these questions is that we'll establish a baseline. A baseline meaning that going forward, Oregon, or continuing evaluation work, if there was such a thing, could choose to initiate certain measures multiple times over time and establish impact in that way, or establish changes in behavior or awareness or the condition, the amount of paint collected by HHW sites. So that's I think would be a useful outcome of the evaluation committee if we can get to that point, at least, of establishing baselines that could serve as a point to measure from in the future. Just wanted to throw that out for consideration over the next 6 months or so. Are there any more questions or comments about the question number seven, the HHW question? Right. Question number eight, the shortest one, I think. How cost-effective is the program? And it must be the shortest because all the information's coming from other questions, I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
That's exactly it, man. I mean, once we've got answers to questions 5, 6, and 7, then, I mean, essentially we'd work up the answer to question 8. So 8 is fed by other questions within the evaluation. That should probably say, it should say not paint care working on it, but EPA and ERG.
Could you go over the meaning of, for everyone, of cost effectiveness and what particular criteria or aspects of cost effectiveness we'll be looking at in
sure.
this evaluation?
Sure. Let me pull up. In the method document, we have defined out the measures of cost effectiveness in section. I'm not going to be able to refer you to the right page because obviously we're still working on some of the method questions, but it's in section 5.1.8. So in terms of cost effectiveness, there are three things that we identified we'd want to track here. One is cost per gallon collected at drop-off facilities, and another is cost per gallon exchanged, recycled, or used for energy. And the final is the total cost per gallon collected, total program cost per gallon collected. So one is kind of, the first one is kind of a measure of cost effectiveness at kind of the entry point of the system. The second one is kind of a measure of cost effectiveness as paint is processed through the paint management system. And the final one is just kind of the sum total of that, how cost effective, I mean, what was the cost per gallon for all paint that was collected. And we're certainly open to comments on those cost-effectiveness measures. You know, we've kind of put those together and put them out for comment as part of the method, and we haven't received much kind of commentary on those cost-effectiveness measures. There's another measure of cost-effectiveness that you think would be relevant or the issues in some of those measures of cost-effectiveness. Please, you know, pass those on, and we'll take those into consideration. Okay.
Are there any other any comments or questions right now for question 8 before we move on? Okay. Question number 9. How is the program designed and implemented to move consumers up the waste hierarchy? So waste hierarchy, that's the pyramid that we've been seeing for quite a few decades now, where exchange, reduce, reuse, recycle, that's the waste hierarchy. And this is about this question is a little bit about how was that done, or what were the ways to do it, but what were the decisions made that affected whether we have moved up the waste hierarchy or not, and why. So I believe that Brielle Kissel is going to be working on this mm-hmm. as part of her graduate degree major project at Tufts University. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, so Brielle works for me, and she's worked on evaluations for our EPA evaluations in the past, just not on this particular one. And so she'll be taking this on as her master's thesis. I know I kind of clarified with her yesterday that she does have kind of approval from her advisors to take this on as a project. And the good thing is her degree is kind of an environmental management economics combined degree, which has a good slant on evaluation methods and what they do. So it kind of works out very well for her. That's kind of reflective of her work here anyway. So she will be kind of defining kind of the details of this question as she works with her advisor to figure out what we mean. And I'll be working, making sure I work with them to kind of make sure that they're meeting the needs of this evaluation. And the good news here is that I see Brielle every day, so we can make sure that this question is kept kind of on track to where we want it to be contributing to this evaluation. I'm not sure where else to go with that. You know, it's kind of I know she'll be getting on her thesis starting in January. I think right now she's finishing up a couple other things, and then she can begin kind of full on this.
Just Lou, Steve here, yep. Just a point of information. I mean, you may view the program as somewhat of a closed-loop system, ideally, in that the consumer in purchasing the paint and using it and then now knowing where to go with it could view that they are in fact supporting the move up the hierarchy because it will be beneficially collected and beneficially recovered and reused. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know how she's going to parse this out there are a lot of multiple comparison issues here in operating within this system. So the design of this research will be very interesting and potentially problematic in getting at the key question of consumer behavior. Obviously, if they say, well, I hardly had any waste, I used it all up, is that going to be viewed as better than getting it somewhere where they know it's beneficially recovered and reused? So
that's right. I mean, I certainly understand that point, and that it starts kind of where you've already begun in the system, or where you would have been in the system otherwise, and what the outcome, how that would affect the outcome. So in that sense, I think there might need to be, it's a very broad question. I mean, this question itself could be a project in and of itself and take up the entirety of a similar-sized budget. I mean, it's a very broad question. So there might need to be some kind of narrowing down of the scope of the question to kind of really get at it, but, staying within kind of what we want to get out of this question. So I would expect as she moves forward with this question, there'll be kind of some back and forth on kind of where this question should really be going and kind of narrowing down a little bit.
And this is Abby. I offer that if she wants to talk to me or maybe some of the other solid waste folks here at DEQ about how we would interpret how these things fit on the hierarchy, we've certainly spent, many years interpreting the hierarchy and how these different entities fit. So if it's not me, there's other solid waste folks that can dig deeply into that.
Great, great. I'll let her know that. And she'll be glad to hear that. I'm sure you're hearing from her to kind of go over that. That's kind of certainly a key point in kind of categorization of the research and kind of getting that right.
This question, when it was first sort of added to the list, I wasn't too excited about it, but the more I sort of think about it, the more critical I think it is for any kind of program like this to start asking this question and finding those methodological challenges to investigating, you know, whether or not these programs are indeed designed to move us up to the waste hierarchy or focus in one area of it. And I think that, yeah, it'll be exciting to see how Brielle starts to tackle this. And Lou, please pass on that I would also love to chat with her at any point during her consideration of design and methodology.
Sure.
And I'd encourage anyone on the call to make yourself available to Brielle for that as well.
Sure. I mean, one thing to think about, too, on the question is that it is very much kind of process analysis in its wording at this point. It's not a question of how did the program move them up the waste hierarchy. It's not kind of focusing so much on data. It's how was it designed and implemented to do it? And the second, that kind of bullet point question, you know, what were the obstacles and opportunities and decisions that were made? Just think about it in that terms. We're not looking at kind of a hierarchy and looking at kind of the waste as it moved up the hierarchy, as we're looking at the structure that was put in place.
Thank you very much, Lou. Are there any more questions or comments on question number 9? Okay. Question number 10, which I think I've just noticed that there might be a bit of a pop-up issue of on our interactive model that we can fix. But question number 10 is, how has the market for post-consumer paint been affected by the program? So what parts of the program have had an impact on the market, and how have they?
Okay. So for this one, this is more of a, I mean, obviously a question like this could be the subject of someone's PhD dissertation in economics. So our approach here, I think, will be a little bit more, kind of look at it in a more qualitative sense, rather than trying to kind of develop any sort of kind of real true market assessment or kind of market model. So I mean, I just don't think we have the time or scope or budget to do something along that line. So we'll be more or less looking at kind of, you know, qualitative data. And, you know, Steve, I'll stay away from anecdotal for you, but it'd be more kind of a qualitative discussion or kind of collecting data or collecting information through interviews and discussions with kind of experts out there who kind of have looked at the market and see how it's changed after the program has been put in place. And then, you know, also then looking at the data that we'd actually look at some data, which would of course be kind of the volume data and things like that. But, it, you know, it's certainly not kind of doing it in a kind of a market modeling sense.
And it's my understanding that Amazon is actually now doing some other things with the paint.
Okay.
That's changed.
That's great. I mean, anytime you get stuff where it's not anticipated.
You know, Lou, one of the things that we, certainly full modeling of the pilot will not be the intended product of our work here. One of the things that could certainly speak to the goal of sort of transferability of the program would be to explore in answering this question how you might go about looking at how the market has been affected by this kind of program, to start to explore what someone might do in case we do come across some researcher who is particularly interested in this momentum in product stewardship.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. We had originally, when we were looking for partners in the academic world to take on some of the questions, this was certainly one of the ones I think we had floated out to some people, and I think we had someone who was interested, but they said the timing wasn't right. And I can't remember where we are with that in this question and finding an academic partner. I mean, if we found an academic partner to take this on, this is a great kind of question that I think can be answered in from a class doing some sort of, you know, market evaluation or doing some sort of quantitative market modeling type approach and want to look at something in a little more detail. But it's a broad question, though, for the economy.
So just to follow up on that, then, considering all the other measures that we're looking at for this evaluation, for question number 10, understanding which data does exist through the work of this evaluation committee, and then which information makes it difficult or impossible to answer question number 10 as of right now, that would be a valuable product to say how this evaluation has moved us closer to being able to estimate effects of this program on paint markets.
I actually think this is a question for when after California implements, if they do. Just market share, I think you'll actually see something there.
Yeah, because I guess, Steve, here, right now it's just Metro's call here. I mean, obviously, increased collection and aggregation will result in the availability of more post-consumer paint products, and then the question is, where are the markets emerging at this point? And, I mean, obviously, government procurement, if those kind of things all emerge, I mean, that's already in place in Oregon, I know, so I really don't know how much will happen. I had a question on the obstacles, opportunities. This question is to address this low-tech recycled paint. Abby, is that a big phenomenon in Oregon, the movement out to free, low-cost, consolidated paint?
Well, it's actually something that's being changed through this program because it's at this point not fitting into the program, and so locals may be stopping that. So there is that may be an outcome that there's less of that.
Yeah. But again, this is not a use of paint that would preclude a sale, you know, like a new market for post-consumer paint at this point. In that regard, it wouldn't offset the sales of new paints at a traditional retail setting. These would be truly a subsidized or low cost product availability.
I don't know if I agree with that statement, but I would say though, at this point, we actually haven't seen volumes of any significance to say that the Metro paint recycling would be much different.
Yep.
So once the program, when we see more paint going through Metro, that's when we could maybe measure this. But at this point, we're not seeing that from the program.
I agree.
But that's a good point, Abby, and that you made about California, and along with what Matt's comment on collecting the information that would be needed to provide a more comprehensive answer to the question. I mean, maybe that's where we focus our efforts here, is trying to answer it as best we can, you know, through our qualitative assessment, but, you know, also provide that information that can be used in a state like California, where something gets rolled out on a broader scale, or within a big state like that, where it's a little bit different market setup, making sure that, you know, we've given them the information that can be used to appropriately answer a question like this.
Okay, are there any more, anything else with question number 10? Okay, question number 11, actually that leads in very well to question number 11 and 12, which I'll go ahead and quickly go over. Question number 11, it's about the goal, the initial Paint Product Stewardship Initiative goal to measure and evaluate the program to improve the potential for replicability and transferability to other states, and continual improvement in the host state of the pilot program. Question number 11, based on the Oregon experience, what implementation and outcome-related information is required for other states to develop and implement leftover paint management systems? So a couple of aspects, ways to look at this. You know, it's the performance measurement evaluation system that we're looking at in our method document, the evaluation methodology. Is it transferable? Is it useful to other states? And then what are some of the best ways to communicate what we are finding, what we're doing, and what we've done, and then what we're finding, and our conclusions and recommendations. A lot of this work has already been done. You ideally, in working with an evaluation where you know that there is the intent for transferability, that you certainly want to spend a lot of the time up front with the evaluation methodology and making sure that it's designed and developed in a way that will make sense to the next potential user of that work. So exactly what Steve pointed to earlier with our little table of measures and questions lined up, you know, another state may not at all have the same evaluation questions. They may have their own set of questions, or they may just want to choose 3 of the 12 that are most pertinent to their work as the foundation of their performance management system. Maybe going forward, Oregon would like to choose 3 or 4 of these questions, or craft their own questions that are now more suitable or tailored to what we know is happening in Oregon. So we've designed this methodology so that it can be adopted by another user in the future, and it can be hopefully easily adapted to meet their needs. So the example that I gave, where we took the table from page 30 and put it in terms of the categories or aspects of measures, that hopefully will help the next potential user to think about this long list of measures in terms of how they will be useful in their state. I believe that second table is on page 47, I believe. And then, of course, we've tried to describe the measures very clearly starting on page 34 of the method document. So this is about kicking it off from the beginning, thinking about we're doing something not just for Oregon here, but so that, for instance, ACA could potentially take components of this and communicate it to future states that it works with, that in how they manage the performance of their system. As for audiences, we've also done a good bit of the upfront work here. It's something that before you design a methodology for evaluating a program, you want to be thinking about who it is that's interested in the answers to the questions that you're going to ask. So in our page 52 of our methodology document, in our reporting section, we do lay out some of the primary and secondary audiences and some of the key formats or approaches to communicating with those audiences come July and ongoing. Obviously one of the ways that we've approached this is by giving a few online venues for people to view what's happening with the evaluation and a way to sort of interact with the evaluation committee if there's an interest. Another way that we're going to be dealing with question number 11 in terms of transferability of performance management or measurement and evaluation system the transfer or communication of outcome-related information is to consider what a performance management or evaluation policy might look like. In other words, what are some of the general rules of the road that sort of we've learned over this process that another future user might use to structure their work generally with their timelines and fundings and the level and type of expertise necessary to do what we're doing here in Oregon, so that people don't have to start out reinventing the wheel. I'm going to move on to question number 12, and if you have a question or comment afterwards, you can let me know. But question number 12, very quickly, is during the program and for each of its primary components, what were the external, unexpected, or unintended influences or consequences? Asking this question in an evaluation is about improving the efficiency of what we're trying to do in question number 11, improving the efficiency of our transfer of this information or replication of components of this program in other states to improve another state's or Oregon's in the future capacity to adopt this pilot program or this kind of program and adapt it to make it work for them. You know, by asking this question up front at the beginning, it sort of instills this anticipatory mindset, especially in the evaluation committee, where we're always thinking about, in these calls, when we hear PPSI briefings, what's going on here that we did not expect or that was not intended by this program. So, you know, you ask this question now because we all know what was unexpected 6 months ago today is normal. So you kind of have this shifting baseline throughout the process. So we're asking the question from the beginning so that we can keep track of where these surprising things happen and we can take those into account into the future. We're at 1 o'clock. I apologize for going a little long. Are there any comments or questions about 11 and 12 there before we conclude this call? And I put everyone to sleep, so I guess I'll just stand up here.
Wide awake, Matt. It was just eloquent. We were just awed.
That's very kind of you. I'm feeling a little better about myself.
Right.
I really appreciate... go ahead, Steve.
I didn't really mean it, Matt. I just want you back down to earth.
Thank you.
I do have a quick question, though.
Yes, sir.
Since we just got this report, it was just put up last night, on the collaborative data that we all contributed to, I assume we're still okay with providing some comments on that and thoughts on that, is that a fait accompli and done? And
No, Steve, everything is, we want those comments and those questions. You know, there's the opportunity to, you know, you can analyze data in lots of different ways. So any opportunity you see to work with this information and interpret it, you know, differently than we have or fill in background, we want it.
Sure. Okay.
All right, is there anything else?
I just wanted to say hello. This is Jennifer Nash. I had to join the call late, but I've really enjoyed listening and very excited about all the positive energy I hear on this call. So thanks.
Thanks for joining, Jennifer. Okay, well, again, if you had comments or questions or suggestions throughout the last hour and a half that you didn't speak up about, or just any ideas, even if they seem a little odd to you, please send them along to us or post them on the Facebook group page or, send it directly to me. We absolutely want those comments. Anyone who listens to this call later on as a recording, that goes for you too. Please do send along anything you have. And if you have any questions...
Again? Is there a time frame where we might hear from you guys again?
Yes, we are going to meet again. We won't schedule it again until the beginning of February. We will meet in mid-February, but my schedule is being filled up for me without my consent, and I'm not able to schedule the call right now.
Okay, sorry to hear that.
That makes two of us. All right. Well, it was a real pleasure chatting with everyone today. Thank you for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll talk again soon.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.